There we go. Okay, so we're starting Shmuel Beis. So this is exciting. The first thing to note as we start Shmuel Beis is the truth is this really should not be thought of as a different sefer. I mean, besides the fact that it's just a relatively recent invention to split the book of Shmuel into two, the first parak of Shmuel Beis is in the same unit as the previous prakim, right? This is something that we've stressed before now, that the Navi shifts us back and forth at the end of Shaul between David and between Shaul. Contrasting David's rise with Shaul's fall, David's conquest of Amalek and Shaul going to the Balas Ov and David going to Urmatumim, Shaul going to die, and now the scene shifts back to David. So even though it's Perek Aleph of Shmuel Beis, this really is, I mean, think of it this way, as part of the same unit as the last few Prakim of Shmuel Aleph. So what we're going to do this afternoon is we're basically going to split the share into two. First half of the Perek is going to be David's reaction when he hears the news and what's going to happen to the Na'ar Amaleki, who's going to tell him what happened. And then we'll spend a little while at the end focusing on David's kinnah, which he composes for Shaul and Yonasan. And we'll show some of the cool things I think that David is doing over there. So this idea that the Navi is shifting back and forth, the Malbim points out, is driven home in the first pasuk of the parak. Navi says, "Vayachrimos Shaul," it's right after Shaul died, but David shav me'akos es amalek. So we have this contrasting image. Shaul has just died, and David at the same time is coming back from striking Amalek. And Malbim writes, "Be'ish shashaka, be'ish shaka shimcho shal Shaul." The moment when Shaul's sun sets, Bnei Yisrael lo atru kach lefnei oyveihem. The Bnei Yisrael do not have any anybody to defend them against their enemies. That was the exact moment where Zarach Shimsho Shel David, where David's sun is rising. V'hu v'arbameyos ish netzvu machane gadol v'kaved ma'on. Right, the 400 men who overcome a vastly more numerous force from Amalek, they come back. And the truth is, their return is a tarti masha, it's a double reference. They're returning from Amalek, but also David really in this moment is returning to kind of the scene of Bnei Yisrael. Because until now, remember, David has been in the land, he still is, but has been in the land of the Plishtim. He tried to get the Achish Melech Gat to allow him to go up north to join the Plishti army in battle. That plan did not work. This also marks the moment where David is going to return to the land of Eretz Yehudah. Right? So he's returning from the battle. He's kind of at the same time leaving the scene of the world of the Plishtim. Then he's there for a couple of days. Then the Navi is going to describe what happens. So 3 days on the third day. So fellow shows up. His clothes are torn. He bows down to David. He tells David, "Mimachane Yisrael nimlatti." I fled from the camp. Remember, David is probably waiting anxiously to hear news of the battle. He wanted to go there. He knows how powerful the Plishti army was. He was in the Plishti army. He marched with the Plishti army. Finally, so he's going to get word. Liomri lav David pasuk dalet. You can get a sense of David's urgency from the way he asks this this person the question, right? What happened? Tell me. He needs to know. The person responds, and it's interesting the order in which he presents the news. So the people fled the battle. David probably was able to deduce that from the shape he was in already, but number one, the people lost. The battle was lost. Number two, gam harbeina fal mina am vayamusu. Not only did we lose the battle, we lost the battle with heavy casualties. Vegam Shaul v'Yehonasan mino mesu. And on top of it all, Shaul and Yehonasan died. Now, the Abarbanel has an interesting point about this pasuk, because the Na'ar Amalek, this person says that Shaul and Yehonasan died. Now, when we finish going through this whole chunk, we'll have to ask what exactly this person knows and whether he was telling the truth or not. But the Navi in the last parak told us that not only did Shaul die, and not only did Yehonasan die, but Shaul's two other leading sons died as well. So the truth is, the report should have been not Gam Shaul Yehonah's son Beno Mesu. He should have told David Gam Shaul Ubanav Mesu. He should have said that all his sons died, which would be very important for Shaul to, for David to know, because that's the line of succession, right? If Shaul dies, then the crown goes to Yehonah's son. If Yehonah's son dies, then the crown goes to the next brother. If all three sons have died, then that is very important information for David to know. So the Abarbanel asks this, and we'll scroll down to get to it on the sheet, because he has two answers. But I think the second one is very, very important, and it's going to telegraph something that David is going to do in his kina. So the Abarbanel suggests, first of all, maybe he only mentioned Shaul and Yehonah's son because they're the main ones. I mean, come on, you know, Yehonah's son is the crown prince. He's the one who is also the very famous commander. But okay, that's not a very compelling answer, frankly. And the Abarbanel seems to be aware of that, because he continues and he says, "Ulai gam kein lo ra'a oso hanar ech mesu sh'ar habanim." Maybe this guy did not see the other two sons. Why did he see Yehonah's son? Yehonah's son haya tamid etzel aviv. Yehonah's son was always next to his father. This is what David is going to talk about in his kinnah. But Yonasan and Shaul and Yonasan, right, even in death, they did not part. So Abarbanel suggests that's going on over here. Yonasan sticks with his father's side. Earlier in Shmuel Aleph, we talked about Yonasan, and we saw that was his faithful decision. He just felt bound to his father. He knows his father is wrong. His father at one point almost wants to kill him. But Yonasan feels just an overwhelming loyalty to his father. The Abarbanel is suggesting that happens all the way until the bitter end. Even as they're being surrounded by the Plishtim, Yonasan does not turn around to flee. He stands right next to Shaul. L'zemar al shnehem yachad shemesu b'malchama. They died together in battle. And that is why this person knows only about Shaul and about Yonasan. The other two sons fell some other time, some other place in the battle, but it was Shaul and Yonasan who remained together. Very important point, I think, that the Abarbanel makes. Okay. So now, going back to Pasuk Hey, so David says to the Na'ar, the Na'ar Hamagidlo, the person who's telling him this stuff, it's almost like we're a little bit suspicious of him. But so David says to him, Eich yadata ki mei Shaul Yehonah's son bino. You know, David is, he's gone through a lot. He takes this news, he doesn't panic, he doesn't freak out. The first thing he knows, any professional commander, you have to verify the intelligence, all sorts of false intelligence comes to people in the fog of war. So he's going to maintain his calm at first. He asks the question, and the guy says back to him, it happened to be that I was on Har HaGilboa. That's pretty extraordinary. How did he happen to be on Har HaGilboa? There's a battle going on between two massive armies. That's like a bit of a rough day for you to happen to be going for a walk. So we'll come back to that in a second. Just the pasuk concludes. V'yinei Shaul nish'an al chaniso. I saw Shaul leaning on his spear. V'yinei rechav u'balei prashim hidbiku. Right, and the chariots and the cavalry were closing in on him. So this makes this phrase nikro nikresi even more bewildering. Anyway, not only did he happen to come upon the mountain, but he's literally in the middle of the battle. I mean, you got the arrows flying, the plishtim chasing, b'nei Yisrael running, and this guy just happens to show up there at that moment. So I think we need to appreciate that this is a very important line. Nikro nikresi, because so we're going to see we're talking about someone from Amalek. We're going to find out a couple of psukim later. This idea of nikro nikresi of happening to show up, right? Which the Radak says, yeah, I happened to come. That is part of the total, historical MO of Amalek, going back to Sefer Dvarim, Asher Karcha Baderech. They happened upon you on the road, Rashi says. Lashon Mikre. That's the whole MO of Amalek, is chance and absence of divine providence, and there's no God in the picture, and it's all just up to, things just happen to work out the way they are. And the Purim story is obviously a major example of that. So we have this image of that's how this Amaleki talks. That's how they talk. That's the world that they live in, the world of Nikro Nikresi. This is just happens to be I was there at that moment. Okay, some of the modern Mefarshim suggest that what was he doing there? He was excited to pick up some of the plunder. you know, regardless of who wins or loses the battle, there's going to be plenty of plunder on the battlefield. As soon as the battle is over, whichever side wins is going to run around stripping all the armor and all the weapons that are lying there. So there's a get rich quick opportunity for this Nahr al-Maliki. So that could be the incentive for him to be there, right? But the Navi just puts those words in there. Oh, I happen to show up. Okay, Shaul is leaning on his spear. He calls to me. Vayomrali niyata, I tell him I'm an Amaleki. Vayomrali lai, so Shaul says to him, Amod na alai mosaseni, right? Stand over me and kill me. Kiyachazani ashabats. I have the agni that's taken hold of me. The Radak, sending us back to last week, suggests that Shaul has already been mortally wounded by arrows. So, right, Shaul is already dying. He's dying a slow and painful death from the wounds he sustained. And Shaul tells the Amaleki, at least in this version of the story, please kill me. Oh, kikolo nashidi, right? I'm still alive, right? And this needs to end. Now Shaul is already, you know, has his spear. So, you know, in theory, he totally could have done this by himself, and that's what Shaul did in the previous parak. And the reference to the previous parak is very clear, right? In the previous parak, Shaul was mortally wounded. He asked his Nosei Kalim to finish him off. The Nosei Kalim wouldn't do it, so Shaul finished himself. But here, right, everything is the same, except instead of his Nosei Kalim, it's somebody from Amalek. And this time, the person from Amalek has no problem obliging Shaul. Amor Alav, right? I stood over him, and I killed him. Right, he was already mortally wounded. There was no hope for life. And then he says, "I took the Nezer Hashem Rosh. I took the crown. I took the bracelet on his arm. Vaviim al Adoni Hina, and I've brought them here to you." Okay, so something I think that's important for us to notice is that, you know, we'll talk in a little bit about the wild discrepancy with the previous parak, but one that's interesting is that here we see the Nahr al-Maliki talking about Shaul's spear. And we should just appreciate the fact that Shaul's spear has come up several times, five times, yeah, put five times down over here. It's almost, Shaul's spear, it's a warning sign, right? This is a symbol, things are not good. You see Shaul's spear, it's with him all the time. Whenever it's with him, something bad happens. And we've only seen Shaul's spear come up after, I think that Mikra makes this point, after the failure of Shaul against Amalek. We had Shaul with his spear throwing it at David against the wall in the very beginning. Parak Yud Aleph, right? This is like 11 psukim into Shaul's career into David's career with Shaul. And Shaul is kind of, you know, throwing the spear at him. At that time, making it look like an accident. Parak Yud Tes, he has the spear again, right? Chaniso Biado, he's just sitting on the throne room with his spear, throwing it at David. One parak later, he has the spear in his hand at lunch, and he's throwing it at Yehonasan. You know, nowadays, don't want people having their cell phone in their home, in their hand, while they eat meals. With Shaul, it was his spear. Parak Beis, the whole story of Nov. How does the story of Nov Yerkanim begin? Well, Shaul is told that David is on the loose. Now David has some men, and he's sitting in a tree. V'chani sel b'yado, he has his spear with him, and that's the fateful moment when Doeg Ha'adomi comes up to him and says, I saw Ben Yishai in Nov, and that's the whole parak, which leads to that total collapse and disaster. And we saw the Abarbanel last week suggest that the way that Shaul dies is a midah k'neged midah for what happens in this parak. So again and again and again, the spear that he has planted in the earth as he's chasing after David, that spear is just a symbol of Shaul's reliance on military strength behind his failing kingdom, right? And at least in the way that Nahr al-Maliki is telling the story, we see him leaning on that, right? Literally, he's been leaning on that spear this whole time, and it has not successfully held him up until now. It's not holding him up now either. Okay. So I think an important thing to appreciate. So Pasuk Yud Aleph, what's the reaction? Of course, Shaul has been chasing after David for years and years. But then he says, "Vayichazek David bivgadav, vayikra'im." Right. So David took his clothing, Radak points out he didn't just take his outer shirt in his agony. He takes all his clothes, every single layer. He tears all of his clothing. Vigam kol anashim asher ito. Likewise, everyone else. You see here there's a kriuk siv, right? It's written bivigdo, but it's pronounced bivgadav, his clothes. So the Radak explains that's the difference between the kri and the ksiv, right? It's written as one layer of clothing, but David actually tore all of it. We learn a halacha from here, which is that if we receive news that a king or the nasi dies, so the halacha is that all of Klal Yisrael is supposed to tear kriya, supposed to tear in mourning for when a leader dies. And David takes that one step further because not only does he follow the halacha and tear the outer layer, but he tears everything because this is not just a formal halachic response. This is a genuine emotional response. Okay. So, right, eulogies here and mourning all the way until the evening. You can imagine, meanwhile, this Nara Maliki is like hanging out there. It's probably a little bit awkward. No, he presumably expected to receive some serious reward, and instead they're just mourning endlessly on Shaul and Yehonasan. And as interesting, the order, Ashul al Yonasan Beno, right? They mourn for Shaul and they mourn for Yonasan. Val al Am Hashem al Beis Yisrael. It's actually presented the opposite order that the Nara Maliki presented it. He said, we lost the battle, there were casualties, and Shaul and Yonasan dies. Here we see, right, they're mourning Shaul, they're mourning Yonasan, and they're mourning the Am Hashem al Beis Yisrael. Defining, it's not B'nai Yisrael, right? We're also Am Hashem. Okay. Pasuk Yigimel. Now, David finally, after the mourning period ends, right, after the initial more day-long mourning period, they've been doing this all day long, so finally David now turns to the Nar HaMagidla. And this is the third time, I think, that the Navi has told us, this is the lad who told him. Eime Ze'ata, where are you from? Have you ever been Ishgir Amaleki Anochi? Now, I think it's really interesting, because this is the second time in the parak we've had somebody asking the person from this guy who he is. Right. He said to Shaul asked him that, and at the time he said to him, Amaleki Anochi. Now he tells David, I'm not an Amaleki, I'm the son of a Ger Amaleki. You almost wonder if, like, having hung out in the camp for a little bit, he kind of felt the vibe that he should not be broadcasting himself as an Amaleki. You know, yeah, right. I'm Jewish. My father converted, right? Maybe picking up on that field room. But that's not going to help me. Over Eliyahu David, Ich le'areis l'shlach yad chalashach esis Mashiach Hashem. How could you possibly not have been afraid, right, to destroy l'shaches, not just to kill, but to destroy Hashem's anointed, right? That phrase which David used back in Parachav Dalet and back in Parachav Vav, when David said, how dare I attack the Mashiach Hashem? How could I attack Hashem's anointed? So, right, David's consistent. He held himself to that standard. He holds this Nara Maliki to that standard. How could you possibly do it? Vayikra David l'acha me'anarim, vayomer, gash pegabo, right? Go stab him. Vayakeo vayamos. Okay, so he accepted the reward. Instead, David has him killed instantly. Now, he's killed in Pasuk Tezvav, which makes Pasuk Tezayin a little bit strange. Because Pasuk Tezayin, Vayomrei lav David, damcha al roshacha, very famous line that your blood is on your head, right? You're getting what you deserve. Kipicha anavacha lemor anochi mosati es Mashiach Hashem. You yourself testified saying, I killed Hashem's anointed. So it's a little bit strange for David to tell him that after he's been stabbed, right? So there are two possibilities. One is that David tells him this right before. One is that this is the psukim are a little bit out of order, right? That that David commands one of the Na'arim to kill him, but first he says to the guy before he kills him, he tells him this. Alternatively, this is a very interesting possibility, is that David tells the guy specifically, right? Gash pegabo, tells him to stab him. So it's very possible that, you know, just like Shaul was stabbed, and then he does not die immediately. It's not a beheading. He does not die immediately from being stabbed. He's gonna not to be graphic, but he's gonna bleed out on the ground. It's very possible that David has the has his Na'ar mortally wound the Amaleki. And then as he is dying on the ground, literally in exactly the same state where he claims that he found Shaul, right? He claims he found Shaul mortally wounded and then killed him. So in that same exact state, when the Amaleki is mortally wounded, David then turns to him in that moment and he says, Damchal Roshacha, you're getting what you deserve. Which is this interesting possibility. Now, we finally need to deal with the obvious question, which is this is not at all the way that that Shaul's death was described in the previous parak. What on earth is going on? So the pshat certainly is that the Na'ar Amaleki is lying. And we'll see a couple of clear indications of that. We have to ask, well, if the Na'ar Amaleki is lying, then why would Shaul kill him? Why would David kill him? So Metzudas David notes this right away, and he says, yeah, I don't care if you're telling the truth or not. Right. I know why you said what you said. You all this you said, you said because you thought that I would find favor in my eyes. Al Shahame Olam Lilo Ayev, because David always Shaul always was my enemy. Even what you said alone is enough to have you killed. Right? So as soon as David suggests that David didn't really care if he was telling the truth or not, and he may have suspected that he wasn't telling the truth. And we'll see. In a couple of prakim, David's going to make pretty clear he does not think that this Na'ar Amaleki was telling the truth. There is an obvious hole in the story. What on earth is this guy doing traipsing through Har HaGilboa in the middle of a battle? But just the chutzpah to say that is enough for him to be killed. Now, Radak is going to point out in three prakim, Perek Daled, that the Navi really seems to tip us off to the fact that Shaul was aware that the guy he was talking to was not telling the truth. Because in a couple of prakim, there's going to be a very similar event. When we get there, we're actually going to highlight the contrast between them. But, you know, in the next parak, Shaul has one surviving son, Ish-Boshes, who is going to be crowned king. And in Parak Dalet, that son of Shaul is going to be assassinated by two people, Rechav and Bana, who are going to bring Ish-Boshes's head to David in Hebron, clearly expecting some reward. And David is going to tell them that you guys totally miscalculated. He says in Pasuk Yod, Ki hamagid li lemor hinei mei Shaul, the person who told me about Shaul's death. He thought it was something good. The guy who told me the news, I killed him. Asher l'siti lo b'sara, just because of the news he told me. So, Kal v'chomer, all the more so for people who actually kill somebody who is innocent. And the Radak says, I didn't put this on here, but the Radak notes this, and he says, from David's Kal v'chomer, we clearly see that he never believed the Na'ar Amaleki, right? The real story, what actually happened, was what we were told in Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed Aleph. This guy then comes, right? This Na'ar Amaleki went to the battlefield, probably right after the battle. He went onto the battlefield to scavenge some of the spoils. He finds Shaul lying dead, right, with wounds and with his own sword in him. So he can figure out what happened. He quickly is able to think of a way to reconstruct the story, to put himself in it, to put him in the best light before David. He takes the crown, he takes the bracelet, he brings it to David, and it turns out that it was a massive miscalculation. Now, at the same time, we should just appreciate the fact that there's no question that the Navi does want us to kind of have this in our mind as one possible way that that Shaul actually died, right? You know, you have to like analyze and work it out and tease through the Pesukim to sense that the Pshat is that it did not actually happen this way. But, you know, if all you were doing was reading the Parak, you would be left with the impression that this is what happened. And probably one reason why the Navi wants to do that is because the image of Shaul being killed by someone from Amalek is one that is important and one that is ultimately true, even if Shaul was not literally killed by an Amaleki, right? Someone from Amalek, even if he did not literally take a sword, take a spear, and stab him directly, in the greater ultimate sense, Shaul was undone. Shaul ultimately was killed by Amalek. It was his failure against Amalek, which was ultimately responsible for his death. Okay, so now let's go to the Kinah. We've time. Okay, good. So David now has a famous Kinah, and I want to spend a few minutes to go through in some detail. I think it's really cool. We're going to see some of the things that David does. The main piece is that David is going to do two things at once. Because David is in an awkward situation. On one hand, he needs to mourn Shaul politically. On the other hand, he wants to mourn Yonasan emotionally. Right? So how is he going to balance? He has to have like a very formal political kinah for Shaul, and Yonasan has to be in there. But in that same kinah, he wants to demonstrate the personal relationship that he had with Yonasan. This is his best friend of the world. This is the best friendship in world history. So we'll see how exactly Shaul does that. So, David does that. It's really amazing. So Pasuk Yochas is a very difficult pasuk, to be honest, what exactly this means. Vaykonin David Sakina Zos. It sounds like the kinah begins right now. Vaykonin David Sakina Zos, Ashal Val Yonasan Beno. But then there's a pasuk which Radak points out does not fit into the kinah. It's not a poetic pasuk. Vayomer Lamed B'nei Yudah Kashas Nek Suval Sefer HaYasha. Very, very difficult what exactly this means. And teaching them the bow, a possibility that now that Yehonasan, who's a famous archer, has died, so the sons of Yehuda have to pick up the bow. Radak has a suggestion that David is giving some chizuk to his men, telling them that we can pick up the pieces, we can pick up the bow and arrow, and we're going to mourn, but we cannot get too despondent, and he has to have that message before he begins the kinah. I think some of the modern mepharshim suggest that there's some musical reference over here, and the Sefer Yashar, which is a book which we've lost, which the Gemara talks about. But so the actual kinah begins with Pasuk Yotah. So I just want to run through the kinah briefly, and then we're going to take it apart in a couple of different ways. So David begins, and he says, right, Hatzvi Yisrael, the glory of Yisrael, which is a reference to Shaul and Yehonasan. Alamasecha Chalal, right, it fell on your high places. Ech naflu gibarim. So Shaul begins the kinah by addressing Bnei Yisrael, and he says that Shaul and Yehonasan fell. They fell in the high places, right, which is Har Gilboa. Ech naflu gibarim. Famous line, which is going to come back to again and again in the kinah. So we have this contrast, right? We have the b'mosacha, we have the high places, we have the falling. Pasuk chaf, al tagidu begas v'al tavasru b'chutzos hashkalon. Do not tell this in the lands of the plishtim. Pentas machna b'nos plishtim, pentaloz the b'nos arilim, right? Lest they rejoice. And you see how the poetry works, right? The balance, right? The biblical parallelism, they call it. Al tagidu begas. Right? Don't tell it in one place, don't tell it another place. Lest the daughters of the Plishtim rejoice, lest the daughters of the Arelim rejoice. Hare Gilboa, now David addresses Har Gilboa itself. Al tal v'al matar aleichem, we say trimos, right? There should not be any dew, not be any rain on Har Gilboa, or even on the, even on the hills, right below the high mountain of Har Gilboa, Kisham Nigal Magin Giburim Magin Shaul. That is where the shield was made disgusting. Bali Mashiach Bashemen, right? It was not anointed with oil. Kind of this image you have of Shaul's shield lying in the dust. Midam Chalim Michelev Giburim Kashas Yonasan Lo Nosag Achor. Yonasan had never retreated from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the Giburim. Right? Shaul's sword never turned back empty. Shaul Yonasan and Evim Chayim, right? They were together in the lives. Mosan lo nifradu, they were together in death. That was the passage that Abarbanel referenced earlier. Minishirim kalu miareyas tovelo. This is like my famous lines. Swifter than eagles, flyer stronger than lions. Benos Yisrael Shaul b'chena, mourn for Shaul. Hamal bishchem shani im adonim. Hamala adizahav al gushchem. All the scarlet he gave you, all the gold he gave you. Eich naflu giburim besocha mochama, going back to the line of Eich naflu giburim. Yonasan abo asacha chalal. Yonasan falling on the high places. Right? Reference it back again. And then another very, very famous pasuk, Chavav. Sali lecha achi Yonasan, right? I'm in agony for my brother Yonasan. Na'am tli ma'od, you were so pleasant to me. Neflasa avas chalina avas nashim. Your love to me was more wondrous than that of the love of women. Eich naflu gaburim v'yavdu klei melchama. And he ends the kina with that same refrain of Eich naflu gaburim. So that's just the basic kina. But now let's take it apart in a couple different levels. So first of all, there's something that I had thought, and then I saw that Dot Mikra picked it up also and ran with it. Something pretty cool, which is there are a number of pieces in David's kina which seem to pick up on the last bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu actually was Klal Yisrael. At the very end of his Osa bracha, if you think to the laning of Chasan Torah, right before Moshe goes up to Har Nevo, so Moshe talks about how Bnei Yisrael are going to defeat their enemies in battle. You're going to have rain, you're going to have dew, Hashem will be your shield, Hashem will be your sword, and then v'kachashu ayvachalach v'ata alba mosemo sidroch. Your enemies will flee before you, and you will be on his high places. I thought that's so interesting that so many of these themes, not Mikra says this as well, so many of these themes are in David's kinna, except here it's reversed, right? Instead of the enemy fleeing from you, Bnei Yisrael flee from the enemy. Instead of you being on the bamos, you being on the high places of the enemy, it's Shaul and Yehonasan who are falling on the bamos, right? They're falling on the high places. Instead of there being dew, David is cursing Har Gilboa that it should never again see dew. It's a very intriguing idea that David in his kinnah is taking the famous bracha of battlefield success that Moshe gives us. And now that we've lost this battle, he's totally turning it on its head and turning it into a kinnah. Okay. Now, what I want to show is, good, we have like 10 minutes left. That's only time to do this. That's excellent. Is how David structures this kinna to be on the one hand a kinna that is both for Shaul and for Yonasan and perfectly even. On the other hand, there's a special kinna for Yonasan there as well. So you can see that, saying it this way, that David sets up the kinna in what we like to call a chiastic structure, right? Which means everything, there's a total parallel from the, right? The first piece is parallel to the last piece. And then everything points you towards the middle, right? So the first pasuk of the poem of the kina is talking about Eich naflu gibarim, the fall of the mighty, and that is what you have also in the last pasuk, right? Eich naflu gibarim. The second pasuk talks about the joy of the Plishti women, right? They're rejoicing, and that is being contrasted with David's agony in the second last pasuk, Sarli lachachi yonasan, etc. The third pasuk talks about the death of the mighty, in particular Shaul, and the third to last pasuk also talks of the death of the mighty, in particular Yehonasan. Right? Yehonasan album of Secha Chalal and Magen Shaul Belima Shoch Hashem. And then right, 4a and 4b talk about the heroism of Yehonasan and Shaul, or the heroism of Shaul. How the right up here, how they. Their weapons never turned backwards in war, and how Shaul always took care of the Benos Yisrael after the battle. So it's a single unit. And what a chiastic structure does is it points you to the middle, right? It means that the most important pasuk in the kinnah is the one that's smack dab in the middle, right? So the core of the kinnah, the way it's being set up here, is not the death. Right, it is the legacy of Shaul Yonasan. Shaul Yonasan and Avim Ben Im Mechayim Mimosim Nefradim Nesharim Kalam Ereis Gaveiru. So the core of the kinnah, the way it's being set up here, is putting Shaul and Yonasan together. That is the image. That is the legacy that David wants you to come out of with this kinnah. Don't remember all the strife and don't remember all the major tensions that Shaul and Yonasan had. Ultimately, they were Ne'ehavim Ben Im Mechayim. And to remember the fact that they were minasharam kalu me'arayos gaveyu, right? To come out of the kina with a real lasting sense of the heroism and the strength of Shaul and Yehonasan, right? So that's one major structural piece that David is doing in the kina. So that certainly encompasses the entire thing. And we see it's focusing on Shaul and Yehonasan together. And something else that you can notice is that is that David balances perfectly the number of times he references Yehonasan and the number of times he references Shaul. Each one of them shows up in the Kinnah four times. Right? See, you have four mentionings of Shaul, you have four mentionings of Yehonasan. So there's perfect balance between the two. The focus is towards the middle pasuk, which is addressing both of them, Shaul v'Yehonasan, and that's one way to look at the Kinnah. But at the same time, let's look and see how David also sets up a Kinnah within a Kinnah, so that there is a separate and really fundamentally different type of mourning that David has for Yehonasan, all happening simultaneously. So we have here with the bolds, is you can see the way that David composes this kinnah, in the world of poetry, it's called an apostrophe, which means he's talking to somebody, some abstract entity, right, which is not actually there. And what that does is it's very appropriate for a kinnah because it helps emphasize absence. Right, he's talking to, first he's talking to Yisrael, abstract entity. Then he's talking to Harei Gilboa, right? So it begins, Hatzvi Yisrael, right? The glory Israel, on your high places it fell. Harei Gilboa, then he exclaims, Al tal v'almatar v'alechem, right? You're not going to have any rain. You're not going to have any dew, because that's where Shaul fell. Shaul v'yonasan, right? Those who were beloved in life and death. Benos Yisrael, he then has, right? He then speaks to the Benos Yisrael, the daughters of Israel, and he tells them, Al Shaul Bachana. He knows there's a consistent pattern. This happens at the beginning of the Pasuk, right? You start the Pasuk with an exclamation of who he's talking to, and then he talks to them again and again and again. But the last of the apostrophes, right, the last time that David turns to address, and this time it's the most personal one, it is not in the beginning of a Pasuk, it is smack dab in the middle. In the middle of Pasuk Chafei, David says, Yehonasan, Alba Mosacha Chalam. So that's a very dramatic break. What is going on here? But you might notice that the truth is the Kinnah could have ended very naturally halfway through Pasuk Chafei. The first half of the Pasuk has nothing to do with the second half of the Pasuk. The Kinnah begins with the refrain, Eich Naflu Giborim. The Kinnah ends with the refrain, Eich Naflu Giborim. But what that really means is that it did not have to end in Pasuk Chaf Zayin. He could have ended in Pasuk Chaf Hey. This would be the perfect ending for the Kinnah right over here. So it ends, and then it keeps on going. So even though there's this balance, right? Shaul, 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 Yehonasan, four Yehonasans, four Shauls, the chiastic piece we saw before. At the same time, David also sets up the Kinnah so that there's a break right here, and then stuck into the second half of Pasuk Chafei and Pasuk Chavav is a separate Kinnah for Yehonasan himself. And it's a very different Kinnah, the one over here. The earlier Psukim were highlighted by balance. Right, you have that the parallelism. Al tagidu begat, al tavasur bechutzar Ashkelon. Pentis machna benos plishtim, pentalos na benos arelim. Al tal valmarta, al tal valmatar alechem. Say Trimos. Yisham negal bnei bagen giborim, bagen shaul b'lishem Mashiach b'shem. Itam chalim mechilat giborim, kashas Yonasan cherev shaul. It's that pattern in every single pasuk. Then he gets Yehonasan, and that very, you know, calm, rigid structure just totally goes out the window. You just have an outburst from David, and it's an outburst which builds up to a crescendo with every single line. So first he says Yehonasan, Alba Mosecha Chalal, right? That's a challenging line, happens to be, because he's talking to Yehonasan. He says Yehonasan. What does it mean, Alba Mosecha Chalal? It fell on your high places. Is that referring to Eretz Bnei Yisrael again? It doesn't make any sense. Dan Mikra has a very interesting suggestion that this is a different Bamos. It's a little bit graphic, but Dan Mikra suggests this is no longer the high places like the mountain where Yonasan dies. but it's that David is referencing the pile of bodies that Yohanan landed on. In other words, Yohanan died a heroic death. He's fighting to the bitter end. He's killing Plishtim to the bitter end. He's surrounded by people, but he's still fighting. And then finally, he falls on the pile of people that he himself had slain. It's an interesting suggestion that Mikra makes. But then he moves on from there and he says, Sarli alecha, Yohanan, right? The first time we see David talk, there's no first person in the whole first piece of the Kinnah. It's all just an address. All of a sudden now, David talks, right? He's talking straight to Yohanan, me to you. Sarli alecha, Yohanan, I'm in pain. Na'amtali ma'od, you were exceptionally pleasant to me. Naflasa avas chalim avas nashim. And then he ends on a crescendo, right? Your love to me was even more wonderful than that of men and that of women. So it's a separate kina. The structure is different. There's no break. Every single other pasuk has a break in the middle. Every single other pasuk has the balance and the parallelism. The Yohanan piece, it starts in the middle of a pasuk, which gives you a sense of the emotion and the charge here. And it's like abrupt. It's just a scream smack in the middle of a pasuk. Yohanan, Alba Mosach HaChalal. And then he names Yohanan again, right? And until then, he had switched off the names. We had Shaul, Yohanan, Shaul. That's not true. Shaul, Yohanan, take that back. But that's so you see what David is doing, right? There's the kina for Shaul and Yohanan, and at the same time, he manages to stick in the personal piece he had for Yohanan as well. So because David does not need to get up there and say, yeah, you know, Shaul and I had a rough personal relationship. This is not the time to mention that. But he is able to emphasize the relationship he had with Yohanan while also having a beautiful kina for both Yohanan and Shaul. And it's just, you know, it's extremely powerful. The first moment we saw David and Yohanan introduce each other, literally, the first pasuk, Ahike chalasol daber el Shaul, v'nefesh Yohanan nikshara b'nefesh David, v'yavho nefesh Yohanan k'nafsho. The first moment we saw them together, right? Their souls tied together, and Yohanan loves his soul as his own. And the last moment we see them being described together, the last moment we see them talking to each other, Yonasan's not there anymore, but it's David talking to Yonasan, and we're given the image of Nafla Sa'avas Chalim Havas Nashim. From beginning to end in life and in death, the relationship between these two is just the all-time friendship, right? And we saw the vision in Perkei Avos that this is the ultimate love, the love She'inat Tzuli B'davar. And the Rambam's explanation, this is a love which is not just based in conveniences or, you know, simple day-to-day events, but that this was a relationship which was what he calls Sibasava in Yan Eloki. Right? There are values here. This is a God-based relationship. Any relationship which is grounded in the values that they share, right? The amunah and bitachon that they share, the common outlook on the goshom that they shared. So that's a love which it's one which is unending, and it's unending, right? It even transcends death. And even have David, right, describing the love, he's talking to Yohanan. I don't know if it's not, if someone talking to someone who's alive, right, talking to, who's not alive, as if we are with that same love and affection, right? And so that's, I think, the closing point from Perek Aleph, is that even as we're about, there are major shifts which are happening now politically. And we're going to see David now transition to the world of kingship and politics and civil war and dealing with generals, right? To take that step back and realize the personal piece over here and that old relationship between David and Yohanan and the values that it was forged in and the fact that it is still alive and well, even after physically the two of them are separated, is something which David certainly found essential for us to remember, and I think therefore essential for us also. Okay, so with that, we'll close here, and looking forward to Hashem to.